Hello again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 50. We're turning 50. Ooh. And that's quite a milestone.
Who knew we'd get this
far? Well, you know, time passes. I figured we'd get there eventually. 50th episode of the Mainland Podcast. Welcome. I am Michael Citro, the managing editor and founder of themainland.com. We are SB Nation's Orlando City SC website. And joining me, one of our illustrious staff writers, Andrew Harrison, is with us this week. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm looking forward to the weekend to get over, unfortunately, the past endeavors of this club.
Yeah, it was a battle of winless streaks on the weekend on Sunday, and a five-game winless streak for Orlando City going into seven-game winless streak Sporting Kansas City, and it looked like only one of the teams was on a winless streak because the other team was dominant, and I don't know that I've seen just that kind of a massacre. Even though the scoreline only ended up 2-1, I don't know that I've seen that big of a massacre, you know, in Orlando City's MLS history. I mean, even the games that were like 4-5-0 didn't seem like it was that heavy of a barrage from the opening whistle to the end of the game.
I think you're almost under describing how much of a massacre that game was. It was just, I've never seen such an onslaught from a team against an opposing team that wasn't two men down. There was just no offensive movement from us. They had 12 shots on goal. We had zero. That's not great. That's and not great is an understatement. The fact that this didn't end 5-6-1 or 5-6-0 is impressive, because this team just didn't have any offensive spark, and you would think Sporting Kansas City should have been where they were. And this is pretty kind of the performance that they had at the start of this season, but It was just such a nightmare from, I think, everybody involved on the Orlando City side.
You would never know, Andrew, that one of those teams played midweek in the altitude of Colorado, and it wasn't the team that lost.
Yeah, they did a double game week, and they still put in what was probably going to be one of their best performances of the season. And if they had scored, and I wrote it in my roundtable answers, if they'd scored before halftime, I think we could have easily been buried. But we were able to hold them off, and I really don't think that was through great team defending or really great performance by any of the guys on Orlando. It was more just the fact that for whatever reason, the entire SKC team had the yips, and eventually they broke it, and it was away they went.
Oh, how many goals Graham Zusi should have scored in that game, and Dom Dwyer. I made a joke, I think, on Twitter that he just doesn't want to score against his whole team because he's had every opportunity to do so. But 34 shots, Sporting Kansas City had 34 attempts at net, and the MLS record is 38. So, you know, I say if you're going to be bad, let's just be historically bad and go ahead and give up 39. Mm-hmm. But Orlando City gives up 34 shots, 12 on goal. And, you know, you mentioned the team defense, and you hit on that exactly hits it, because it's not just the back line. It's the defensive midfielders. It's the attacking midfielders. It's everybody. There was no cohesion in the defensive end, and it wasn't just a matter of absorbing pressure, because, you know, there are ways to absorb pressure without letting the ball get into dangerous spots. But every time you turned around, either Brad Davis or Benny Failhaber had the ball just above the box with plenty of space to get the ball to a teammate.
Yeah, and I think it's becoming a habit of this Orlando City side too, isn't it? Just that we'll just take all the pressure you have to give us, and then we'll hoof it forward and hope that Lyron gets on the end of it and we'll score. The problem is, no, that is not a way to play the game in Major League Soccer or anywhere else in the world. No team can solidly defend for that. And I think we saw it since the Philadelphia game. We've just been happy to let the other team have the ball, come at us at will, and then try to deal with it. And unfortunately, that philosophy and that outlook is failing us badly. And it's failing us. You know, the defense is taking a lot of stick for those four guys on the backside, but You really have to look up front. The partnership between Saran and Higuita, even though Higuita wasn't playing today, has crumbled in the last few weeks. that no Cirino, he should be taking that step back and covering it, but we also have to look towards Kaká and Carrasco. You know, these people were on the field too, and mm-hmm. they didn't put in the effort. When you see your team going down in flames the way we went on Sunday, somebody should have stepped up, and it probably should have been Kaká, but I would have taken anybody from watching this performance.
Yeah, it, Kyle Larin touched the ball 11 times, Andrew. 11. Yeah. It was ugly, because even when they got on the ball, they gave the ball right back. Yeah. It was like, here's an outlet pass to you, you know, Roger Espinoza. Mm-hmm. Here, have the ball. You know, and one I wanted to bring up to you, because this has been sticking in my craw like all week. Well, I mean, it's only been a couple days, but still, it just feels like it's been months. I've never seen this before. The team announced a 4-2-3-1 with no Chirino as the left attacking midfielder. Mm-hmm. And indeed, they looked like they came out to play that formation. And yet, every time the ball came forward, no Chirino was the defender in the corner while Breck Shea was well inside the penalty area.
Yep.
But we didn't see that on the other side with Ramos and Sarin. You know, it was typically Ramos out in the corner, you know, defending the fullback as you would normally see. So, is this some kind of weird scheme that Orlando City is playing, because it's the second game in a row we've seen it? Or is Nocerino just thinking that Breck needs the help? I need to go do this.
I think Nocerino is currently playing Mad Libs at defending. You know, he's thinking that he can do a better job. But the problem is, I think, as much as we can, you know, I don't want to say Shea has been playing terribly, but I think his game level has gone down because he's had to deal with Nocerino tucking inside so much. And that makes it really hard to play as a wing back, because you have to know that you need somebody back there to be able to defend you. And mm-hmm. if it's somebody you don't think can do the job as well as you, you don't go as far forward. And you do worry that little bit more. And I think I've been critical of him in the past, and I am trying to give him a pass because he is still new to this team. But I think you look at our performances, and it's been since Nocerino started that we just haven't been able to do anything other than soak up pressure and hope to the love of God we don't concede early on. Mm-hmm. And that is something that has to change. I'm not too sure how they're going to change it, but I think Vinter has to come back on. He was arguably our best player while Nocerino was unavailable. And mm-hmm. we have collapsed without his width, his pace, because that matches, you know, Molino on the other side with both of them playing the ball into Kaká and into Larin. That is so – those are the people who score us goals.
And, his biggest attribute is his hustle.
Yeah.
And that's been missing. And also that is something that is infectious and rubs off on other guys when he's out there, you know, busting his – but to get back and to make plays and to make interceptions and then turning right around and getting forward on the attack. He's been amazing. But that was an interesting take on the Nocerino Shea thing. My thing is, okay, if Nocerino is going to come back deep, why doesn't Shea go forward and give him an outlet pass? Because Shea can play left wing. And, you know, the entire thing breaks down when you've got one guy who should be forward and prepared to not only help defend out on top of the box, but also be available as an outlet. And now you've got two guys stuck in the corner, one guy stuck in the corner, and then Shea in the box covering really nobody. It's just untenable, and that can't happen. Now, we do know this, that Adrian Heath did not coach on Sunday. He was up in the suite, and Mark Watson has fallen to 0-2 as the interim coach for Orlando City. But I don't think really the coaching had a whole lot to do with it. We've seen this trend in the road games where the team gets dominated. There's been very few exceptions. I mean, they were dominated against New York City FC, but happened to get a great performance out of Joe Bendick and kept a clean sheet somehow. They got shellacked against the Red Bulls, and it got even worse at Kansas City. The only real time they went on the road and actually kind of gave as good as they got, and even late in the second half, they didn't give as good as they got, was the Philadelphia game.
Yeah, and even then, we talk about that mentality that eventually, if you know, we're tied at the 70th minute, Heath just looks for the draw. And that was what happened in the Philadelphia game. You can't stop playing. This is a game of 90 minutes. You have to keep playing, and you always have to go out and get it. Because even if you don't want to give it up, you know, 3 points is always going to be better than that one. Okay, one's going to be better than none, but you have to take the rough with the smooth. And this league is all about parity. You should be able to go away from home and get 3 points if this league is exactly what MLS wants it to be, which is any given Sunday or Saturday or Friday night, you can go and win all 3 points. And I don't like the ethos that, you know, we're away from home, let's just try to steal that point, because right now we're not capable of stealing that point. I am still kind of upset that Joe Bendik, even though he conceded 2 goals, didn't make some element of a team of the week with 10 saves. Mm-hmm. I mean, he single-handedly kept us in that game.
I actually gave him a vote in the SB Nation MLS Player of the Week. You know, we turn in our top three, and he was my number three on the top three. And people will look at that around the league and say homer pick, but 10 saves is way too much work to have to do. And it wasn't only just the saves. His positioning was magnificent in the game. I mean, he made saves look easy that were like one-timers that just came right to him because he knew where to go and where his coverage was. And, you know, I took a little bit of stick for giving him a 7 in the grades, but that was mainly because, you know, I probably will never give higher than a 9, so he kind of had to start at a 9. I took a point off for giving up 2 goals, because regardless of who you are and what the situation was, if you give up 2 goals, you probably need to take a point off. And then I took another point off for his distribution, which wasn't great. But, I mean, the guy was freaking so tired from stopping the ball, he probably had no energy left to punt, you know.
Well, and that's, you know, you bring up an interesting point. The other thing that is about this team, continuously distributing it through the back when our game plan is to say to them, you know, we'll soak up as much pressure as you want to give us. Let's just hoof it 50 yards and make them come back. Let's not throw it 20 and take it off a defender who's already tired. I want you to boot it as far away when you're kind of soaking up that kind of pressure.
Yeah, and play kickball.
And we, you know, and I, you definitely could say his distribution at some point where you said, you know, just you should just kick it up the field, let us fight for it. We didn't do that, and that also hurt us a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't defend. Defending, everybody says defending takes more energy out of you than attacking. And I think you saw it, because that team was, they had nothing left after that game. I'm going to take it that we both think Bendik is man of the match.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't give it to anybody else right now, because there was just, I mean, single-handedly he stopped that probably from being a potential double-digit game.
Yeah, it was really... It was one of those where it really wouldn't have been surprising had they got 8 or 9 or 10 goals. You're right. It was, they had so many good chances. I think if Orlando City ever had that many good chances and didn't score at least 5, I would be livid.
Yeah.
At the finishing. And you know, Sporting Kansas City fans are happy to get the 3 points, but they still have to be worried about the finishing, because there were a lot of sitters that they just didn't connect on. And still, Orlando City, early on, had some very dangerous chances with Shea getting up the left wing and crossing in. I'm pretty sure his first one was a shot.
Yes.
And I think they may have actually gone back and changed it to a shot, but as of halftime, it was not listed as a shot, and it had to have been a shot. But all he had to do was pull that back across for Lair, and it's a tap, and it's 1-0, and you never know what can happen there. You know, maybe the team gets a little more comfortable and confident and you know, settles down and thinks, hey, maybe we can do this. They did actually get a goal without getting a shot on goal, on an own goal, which I hate to say it every week, but another curious non-call when Bowden crossed the ball into the box and it clearly hit Zusi's arm, which was outstretched, not in a normal position. You can't say ball to hand, because that arm was well outside there, and it kept a dangerous cross from getting in. So, you know, I guess a little bit of ball don't lie when you get the own goal off of that. Nice job by David Mateos to get up and head that back across the goal. And I think if it hadn't been put in by the Sporting Kansas City defender, I think Laren would have cleaned it up. But It was 1-0, and Orlando actually led in the second half of the game that was getting completely dominated. And then it just all caved in with some lapses on defense. And, you know, we hear the fans complaining about Breck Shea, but I'm not seeing a whole lot better from the right fullback.
Well, I would say this was arguably one of Breck Shea's most better recent performances until he got hurt. And then he had to take a step back. But going back to you saying, you know, if we'd scored early on, you know, maybe we would have got more comfortable in the game. The problem is we kind of actually already know exactly how it would have gone. It would have been the first Red Bulls game where we scored within 3 minutes and then we soaked up pressure until the dam broke, which is almost exactly what we did in this game. And when we say the two people we just remarked on there, Shea and Mateos getting forward, those are two defenders. When our best outlets are our defenders, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I think you meant Ramos there.
Sorry, Ramos. Yeah, you know, we're getting forward and just actually dealing with those. That's a lot of worries, but then that also means they're doing the offensive job too, which means that the midfielders and the forwards need to step up and do the defending when it comes down to it, and they don't. So I don't think there's a better option than Shea right now. It'll be questionable, I guess, whether or not he starts on Saturday.
Because of the injury.
Turf
on
his knee, you never know. But I think you can't really say that he wouldn't be the first name on the team sheet if he wasn't injured right now.
So, yeah, Shea took a knock. It didn't look terribly bad for him. Not so with Darwin Serrin, who apparently high ankle sprain and... they say they'll evaluate him, but, I mean, it wasn't a good sign that they were sending him for x-rays today, actually, as we record this on Tuesday. You don't send somebody for x-rays if you know, unless it kind of looks kind of serious. And, you know, I know a lot of that stuff's precautionary, but you hear the word high ankle sprain, and those are things that can linger for weeks and weeks, and I just don't expect him to be back in the lineup this week.
I don't expect him to be back. The way he went down did not imply to me that he would be back within, you know, on really a short game week with travel to come back. He looked like, and he's also not one of those players who necessarily, you know, it's kind of an unwritten rule when you're actually hurt to kind of just stick your hand up in the air and somebody will come save you. He did that. He stayed down. I think he's also not one of those players that would choose to get stretchered off if he didn't have to. So I don't see how he possibly starts. And like you say, high ankle sprain could mean that he's actually done some damage down there, and it'll take time for it to really flare up.
Yeah, those can take a couple months to come back from. So we'll wait and see what the report is later in the week, but certainly doesn't look good for him being in, which probably is good for Servando Carrasco getting more time. This is a very critical stage because there's 3 games in 9 days coming up, Andrew, and it starts this weekend against the Eastern Conference leaders, Montreal Impact. Now, we're hearing that Drogba may not play, but that may not matter because they've got a guy named Ignacio Piatti who's unbelievable.
Yeah, Piatti, he had a great season last season. He's just continued that on. He's really their most dangerous outlet right now. He's really Diego Valeri in the same mold. He's got the great distribution. He's got the ability to run at you. He really offers so many different options for Montreal defending as well as going forward. And I don't think I think the loss of Piatti would have been bigger than the loss of Drogba for them coming down here.
Yeah, he's their talisman. I mean, this is not hype. On my part, I think if you were to ask me right now, he's in the top three for MLS MVP this year.
Oh, without a doubt. He has been phenomenal. I know that I've voted for him a few times for Player of the Week on the SB Nation poll. He's just one of those people that he's a game changer for them right now. And I thought Cameron Porter, when he came back after suffering his season-ending injury early last season, was going to be great. But they just have so many weapons right now. And then you throw Drogba into the mix, and they just seem really dangerous and are looking good on that first place.
Yep. Now, this is gut check time for Orlando City. They've got Saturday night against Montreal. Midweek, they play Philadelphia at home. Then they go on the road over the weekend, the next weekend. So it is going to be a very critical juncture. If they lose touch with that red line now, then there may be no recovering, even if they have a nice run like they did at the end of last season. And quite frankly, if they dig a deep enough hole, that's not a good sign for Adrian Heath.
No, and I think this is make or break time. We've been able to pull out points and people have been happy, but if we don't get, I would say, at least 4 points out of nine, and for this three game stretch, we will be in trouble. Just because once that red line starts to slip away, there is really no catching it. Okay, we came on a bit of a tear last year, but there were some really bad teams in the East last year. And unfortunately for us right now, we're looking like the bad team in the East. And not if we don't stay in touch, we will never get back up there.
Ah, man. Well, it all starts Saturday night against Montreal Impact, 7:30 at Camping World Stadium. We will be there to have all the coverage for you at the mainland, and we'll be live tweeting the game as well. And, we'll see what happens. I mean, when good teams have come in before, we've greeted them rudely. So hopefully we can play spoilers to them and get much needed 3 points, because as weird as it sounds, still only 5 points out of first place in the Eastern Conference.
I know, and we're all doom and gloom, but this is how tight the Eastern, it was tight last year, but I think it's even tighter this year because so many people went out and got some undiscovered talent, and the West is really making it difficult for people to get those extra points because the West is just looking so strong this year.
It really is. It's funny because you look at it and you go, it's a terrible season. We have 2 wins, only one more than last place Chicago, and still only 5 points out of first place. So,
yeah.
With, I believe, a game in hand over Montreal as well. So we'll probably lose that game in hand here over the next couple weeks as we head into a busy part of the schedule. But we will see what happens. We'll be back next week to break down Montreal and look forward to both Philadelphia and you know what? I haven't looked far enough ahead. Who are we playing the weekend after?
I've got no idea. Let's just go for it. Let's go be happy, right?
Yeah, let's just go get some wins here. A win will make everybody feel better because all of a sudden you go flying up the table because, again, everybody's so bunched up. So we'll see what happens on Saturday.
Oh, it's New York City away.
Oh, yeah. That's always fun. At least we know Kyle Lyron will probably get a goal.
Yeah, because they haven't been sucking right now.
Yeah, I tell you what, when we have more time, we're going to probably, if this doesn't change, we're probably going to have to talk about, Laren's goal drought. He's had, one goal since March.
Yeah.
So, and I know he missed a game with injury, but still, one goal since March is not good for your starting striker who everybody was like, okay, no, there's no such thing as a sophomore slump, and he scored in his first 3 games and now one since then. So, but you never know. He can score in bunches, so we'll see. We'll see if the Canadian Messi can get it done. Let's turn our attention to a team that did much better on the weekend, and that is Orlando Pride. Gets a 1-0 win over Western New York Flash in a game that looked like it was going to end in a scoreless draw or that somehow the Flash was going to nick a goal. It never really looked like Orlando Pride would score until they ended up doing it.
Yeah, it was such a great game. It was back and forth. The Pride just seemed really quiet, but once again, they dug in deep, and Alex Morgan produced what could potentially be goal of the season for me already, with just a beautifully timed run, and it just brought the crowd alive, and we were always going to stay in it from there.
She made a number of great runs. People, I have heard people say that Morgan didn't have a great game, but she made some very good runs all game long, and it was just a matter of the service not getting there. Either the ball was too long over the top and the keeper would get to it, or it was too short and the defenders would cut it out. And finally, Kristen Edmonds played the perfect ball, and that chip was, not only was it a little bit cheeky, but she pulled it off with such skill. It's really hard to describe how difficult a goal like that is to score, and yet, Captain Morgan got it done.
She made it look – I think isn't that a sign of great talent, though, when you make something that's incredibly difficult look simple? I mean, she got her pace right. She didn't stray offside. She took it down really well. And I'd actually remarked to the people I was watching the game with earlier that D'Angelo was so far off a line all the time that she was worth having a go on the chip. So when Morgan did it, I didn't surprise me. She was one of those things where she's reading the keeper and checking her positioning. I thought it was just a great goal, and it really, you know, when you watch a game, it's not about what you necessarily do on the ball all the time. Sometimes you have to give credit for the fact that you don't touch the ball because you've given that space to somebody else. You've allowed mm-hmm. them to make the run. And I think Morgan does that in spades. She really just drags people away because she's so dangerous.
Jasmine Spencer was good. She had a good game. I thought that Steph Catley had a good game. Another big save from Ashlyn Harris, who came out on a 1v1 and made herself big and made a vital save to keep the other team scoreless. And then, of course, I thought the game changed completely at the half when they brought Leanne Sanderson on.
Once again, she just – you can see why she keeps coming off the bench. She really is a super sub, and I think Samani is using her in the fact that, you know, we have such a great talent that is able to come off the bench, and then all of a sudden the away team or the opposing team, you know, thinks they figured us out, and then all of a sudden we have somebody of Sanderson's quality that's able to come off the bench, and she just changes the game. I thought she made everybody look better, but the actual substitution for me that I thought really changed the game was Toni Pressley, because she allowed the partnership of Monica and Alloway to be broken up, because they were not having a great game together. By bringing on Pressley, they were able to move Monica forward, and I thought that was what really changed the game for us, and made Sanderson so much more effective with her fresh legs.
Yeah, the center backs seem to be having some communication issues and some execution issues, particularly Monica, who was replaced and moved up to midfield when Pressley came on. And it was good to see Toni Pressley get some playing time because, you know, she's going to be needed when those players leave for international duty. She's going to need to be that rock back there without Alloway and Monica in there at center back. So it was good to see that. It was a good change. Sanderson, for me, was amazing. She came on and she was so good in possession. It was almost like watching Kaká with the men's team. Just keeping possession with players all around her, you know, sneaking passes through and just creating havoc. And like you said, making everyone around her better, which is really the sign of a great midfielder.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, not to go back to the Orlando City side again, but that's where we're not seeing from Kaká. He is not raising everybody's game in the way that Vinter was. You know, when you have a player who's giving their all for the full 90 minutes, you get buoyed by that. And even if you go down and that player's still running, you can bring it on. And I think, you know, Leanne is being able to do that for this team. And I think it's really helpful for them to be able to get to halftime and say, oh, you know what? Okay, we haven't scored yet, but we have great talent on the bench. She's going to give us a completely different option. She's going to change our shape. And I know that she's going to give me that space for somebody like Spencer who can, you know, all of a sudden she's going to have the ability to get away where she wasn't necessarily able to in the first half.
Oh, man. I had to chuckle because I saw one of our questions for our Ask the Mainland podcast questions for later. So we'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, Pride is now 3-0 at home and has conceded only one goal while scoring six. So a dominating start to the NWSL season, at least at home. The club is now 0-2 on the road, embarking on a four-game road swing, which will take them to Houston Dash, which is unbeaten at home, FC Kansas City, which is a perennial power, New York Flash, which gave them everything they wanted here the other day, and undefeated Washington Spirit. So that is about as tough as a four-game stretch on the road as you could get without having Portland or Seattle in there as well. So this will be a real test to see if the Pride is for real and if they really are going to be contenders for a playoff spot, or if they're going to maybe slide back and then be like desperately fighting for that last spot the rest of the season. So a big four games ahead, and we've got the perfect guest to come on and talk to us about that and about many other things having to do with the Orlando Pride. And we'll get to our guest right after this. Joining us on this week's Mainland podcast is Jasmine Spencer from the Orlando Pride. Jasmine, thanks so much for being with us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. I just wanted to, first of all, congratulate you on a great start to the season. And I wanted to, I guess, start out by asking about this weekend's game against Western New York Flash and your performance and overall what you thought of the team's performance and that incredible goal by Alex Morgan.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of people know by now that I played for the Flash last year, so it was a big game for me, and I know a handful of us who have also spent some time with that organization. And they're a good team. They're young, but they're feisty, and we knew it was going to be a battle. And we were able to get out of there with the 3 points. It was great. I thought it was a good game.
Well, and on that game, obviously, I noticed I stand in the supporters section and I watch all the game. And whenever you get a touch of the ball, the stadium seems to elevate, and the fans come alive a little bit more. Do you feel that on the pitch?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like nothing I've ever experienced before. The energy and the like, you just feel their presence when you're out on the field, and I think it gives me that extra boost when I'm out there, and it keeps me making those runs and being dangerous in the attack. And I feel like every time I get the ball, I can do that much more because I feel like the crowd is behind me, and it's an amazing feeling.
You know, Jasmine, you know, the Pride is undefeated at home, you know, perfect record, 3-0. And I want to talk a little bit about that opening game because it was such an emotional day, I think, for the organization. I mean, the record crowd and the you know, obviously the result over Houston. And, you know, it just didn't seem to me, I was up in the press box watching, but it didn't seem to me like you guys even wanted to come off of the pitch that day. It seemed like you just wanted to sit there and bask in the warm reception from the fans and sign autographs and that kind of thing. You took your victory lap and all that. Can you describe a little bit about what that was like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was unbelievable, for one, just to break the NWSL record, but two, like, I feel like the community and Orlando was just excited about the day as we were, and that's what made it so unbelievable. Like, walking that lap and seeing how all the fans were so excited and so happy for us just to be there and have a women's team in their city is incredible. And I mean, I'll never forget that day in my life. It's probably one of the greatest moments of my career so far, and I know that everyone on the team feels the same way, and it's just awesome to be a part of it all.
Well, and you talk about that atmosphere. Obviously, the away games so far for the Pride haven't been the most successful, and the team's about to start a month-long stint away from home. How are you guys gearing up to get ready for that and hopefully turn those losses into some points on the way on the road?
Yeah, it's been difficult for us, but I think we've been playing well on the road. I think it's about just getting the points, and whether that means getting a late goal like, you know, we did this past weekend, or holding on to a lead like we could have potentially done in Portland. That's what makes, like, away games difficult. But I think we've grown so much since our last away game, and I think we're growing every week, and we're really prepared to come away with points now that we're going to be on the road for the next month.
You know, as one of the you know, somebody who's diminutive in size, you seem to take a lot of abuse out there with the fouls and the physical play, and yet, you know, you just keep going and your motor never seems to stop. Is, you know, was that always a hallmark of your game, or did you have to build that?
I mean, I feel like I can say that it's always been a part of my game, but I mean, it's definitely something that I've had to work at. My family is small, you know, it's not like I'm 5 foot and my dad is 6 feet, you know, I come from a small family. So I think all of us, and we're all pretty athletic, we've all had the mentality, like, you know, even though we're small, that we're going to come at you big. And I've grown up with that mentality. But, you know, every level, there's always been like, oh, you know, we don't know, you're small, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, they see me on the field and it just doesn't become relevant anymore. And I'm proud of that because, you know, it doesn't matter how tall you are if you can still play big and you bring what you can to the game. And you know, I think my speed and athleticism makes up for my lack of height, and I just don't feel like it's even up for debate anymore, and I'm proud that I've made it that way. So, yeah, I guess I've worked on it as far as the mentality and being able to overcome it, but I've always played like this my whole life, so.
Well, and obviously you headed into the start of the season with the Pride. You've been playing in Australia the past two off seasons. Has that helped you always get ready for the start of the NWSL season and be that stronger player who can play the long season?
I think so, yeah, because, you know, there's nothing that really emulates a game scenario or even team training environments. And since we have such a long off season, for me, I think it's really important that I can go somewhere where I can train in that team environment and get game fitness and game experience. And the last couple of years, it's been in Australia. And before that, I was in Cyprus, which, I mean, are two beautiful places. And the weather makes it possible that you can still train, you know, in those winter months for us. And so I really think that I've grown a lot being able to go overseas and play in the off season.
You know, a lot of people don't realize, I mean, with 10 teams in NWSL, just a 20 game season, the season's already a quarter of the way over. It's hard to believe. What are some of the differences between the Australian league and the NWSL?
Well, for one, I think just our exposure and our backing that we get for women's soccer and sports in general is bigger here. So we have a bit more funding and a bit more recognition than they do over there, but they're growing. And being at the fact that their Australian women's national team has been doing so well, I think they're just starting to get momentum to draw more attention to them. Which is really great. And I think another big difference is just the youth and experience that, like, they have compared to us. They don't have a college system like we do. So a lot of those girls in that league are, you know, 16 to 18. Like, 20 is an older girl on the team, whereas here, you know, you play through college until you're, like, 21, 22. So we have a couple more years of experience at playing at a high level than they do. A lot of those girls, you know, come out of high school and then they go straight into the W League. So it's still a growing process for them. But I know that a lot of internationals have been going over there, and it's only strengthening their league. So it's really great to see.
Well, and a few people on the Pride's roster this season had already been coached by Somani, either at a club or an international level. How has it been working with Somani for you?
I think it's been great. He's something different than I've had in a long time, maybe since before college. He brings a different knowledge of the game than a lot of the coaches I've played under before. And I think he has done well with trying to balance, you know, like getting results and dealing with everything being an inaugural season. You know, there's so much outside of soccer that goes on because we're a new team and in a new city. But, you know, what's most important is getting results, and we've been able to do that so far. And I think that has a lot to do with how Tom's been managing it all.
Jasmine, you've been, you know, in this system, you've been able to use your speed and athleticism, and you've been able to get on the ball and get forward. There hasn't been, like, a lot of, you know, finishing yet, but I'm wondering, like, how do you keep your positive outlook and how do you keep your confidence up when maybe your shots aren't going in?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's definitely tough, but I have a great foundation and support system around me, both here and at home, that keep me positive, and they appreciate the energy and the effort that I'm doing. And, you know, I'm just out there every day after training working on it, so I know my time will come, and when it does, I mean, I'll enjoy it, and I'll love it, and I'll get right back to work so I can score some more. So, you know, it's a process, and just take one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. And women's soccer is still growing as much as it's popular here in Orlando. Who is your potential player to watch out for as this season goes on, especially with the Olympics taking place this year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I try and, like, just sit back and see who's going to surprise me. You know, I don't I don't really necessarily follow, like, the biggest names and see what they're going to do, because I think the beauty of our sport is just seeing what magic happens in the moment, and you never know who's going to make that magic happen. You know, it could be someone like a Carly Lloyd, or it could be someone that we don't even know exists yet. So we'll just see. I'm just going to enjoy the moment, and I'm really excited to see what happens at the Olympics.
You know, Jasmine, this is a very brutal four-game stretch on the road for you guys. You're at Houston. They haven't lost a home game yet. At FC Kansas City, at the New York Flash, and at undefeated Washington Spirit, right in a row. Have you talked as a team about what your goals are in terms of what you need to get out of this road trip to sort of stay in the hunt for those next four games at home?
No, actually, you know, we really haven't thought too much about that. We're just trying to take it one game at a time. Right now we're focused on Houston and trying to get points there. And we're really focusing on us, to be honest, and getting better every day and building our brand of soccer that we want to go out and play. And I think just focusing on us is going to help us be able to play our best at those away games. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, and obviously we're still an expansion side. How has it been for you as a player, you know, going through the expansion draft and potentially leaving a franchise that, you know, that you had been with for a couple of years? And was that difficult for you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely had mixed feelings. I felt like the fans at the Flash and up in Rochester definitely embraced me, and I had a lot of support coming from them, but at the same time, I was also ready to try and see what else I can do in the league and explore new opportunities, and Orlando has given me that opportunity, and I feel like I'm in where I'm supposed to be in this moment.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's you never know what life's going to throw at you, so you may as well just go with it. Let's talk a little bit about the artist formerly known as the Citrus Bowl, Camping World Stadium. You guys have been drawing pretty well, you know, obviously well for an NWSL team, and I think the Mother's Day crowd was, I think, bigger than the other two Mother's Days around the league. So the team's doing well in terms of fans, but in that big, big stadium, do you still feel the energy from those fans? Because it seems like that the stadium's mostly empty, but there's still a very, very nice crowd there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, like, give all the kudos to our fans because they're so amazing. Like, I honestly can't even tell the difference between the 23,000 we had and the 8,000 we had on Mother's Day. And I think we had maybe 8 or so again this past weekend, but they're so involved and they're so animated the entire game that, you know, when you're out there, you can't even tell that, you know, half of it's empty because that's how incredible they are for the entire 90 minutes. So they're amazing. We love them so much.
And who has impressed you most on the Pride's roster throughout this season?
I kind of get that question a lot, and I never can pick one because I've played with a handful of the girls, and I haven't played with the other handful, but the way we've all gelled has been unbelievable. Like, I would have never expected that, and I don't even know how or why, but for whatever reason, we work, and it's been amazing, and yeah, I mean, no one person really stands out of it. It's just been incredible how we've all been able to come together so quickly.
You know, Jasmine, before we let you go, just one last question. Just want to kind of get a feel for your humble beginnings, I guess, as you know, so to speak. How did you actually get into soccer, and who did you sort of gravitate to as saying that's a player that I'd like to be, you know, like someday?
Yeah, so I have two older brothers, and they both played, and we're super family oriented, so we were out on the soccer field every weekend. And, I mean, they got to do a lot of different sports. By the time I came around, it was mostly just soccer for me. And just watching them play every weekend, I was like their line girl. And I shagged all their balls at their games, even through high school. And I think I took the best of both of their games, and I've combined them. And it's enabled me to make a professional career out of it. So I definitely attribute all my success to them.
Well, Jasmine Spencer from the Orlando Pride, it's been so much fun having you on the podcast this week. We're really happy that you came on, and we thank you for your time. And you know, best of luck not only this week in against Houston, but you know, the rest of the season, especially these next four games on the road.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Well, we're just about ready to wrap up another Mainland podcast. We really want to thank Jasmine Spencer from the Orlando Pride. She's been, you know, amazing both in the midfield and out on the wing as an attacking forward throughout the season so far. And she's really been a difference maker, Andrew, on that team in terms of giving people like Alex Morgan space to work with.
Yeah, I think she's that dynamo that is giving. I think something that we didn't realize was going to be on this team, which is speed. She's able to just pull so many people away. And I think what she really does is she just elevates the crowd. She brings people in. People get energized about watching her play. And I think that's a great thing for an expansion team to have.
Yeah, and she starts finishing her chances. And, you know, it's going to be lights out, and the Pride is going to be fantastic. They will be very hard to beat when she starts finishing her chances. So hopefully that will happen Friday night at the Houston Dash at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So, again, we'll have full coverage of that. And, of course, Orlando City in action on Saturday and Orlando City B on Sunday. And Sean will be out in Melbourne for that match. Before we get to our key matchups and predictions for the Montreal game, Andrew, we do have a little bit of Ask TML this week. We've got a question from Ethan Vaughn on Twitter.
Okay.
And Ethan wants to know, why do you think Adrian Heath continues to play Nocerino?
I think we've kind of covered this before, but he brings in, you know, we've realized he actually has a lot more power over the transfers than we thought. You know, he's bringing in people that he does have the ability to see and work out. This isn't the team that is just stepping blindly into signings. This is not a league where you can do that. I think he's just giving him the opportunity, and he must be seeing something on the training field that we're just not seeing. He is, you know, but you also have to put it with the fact that sometimes Heath just sticks with a player for too long. And I'm hoping that's the case with Nocerino, because if he doesn't come good, Heath will start to see the fans turn more and more against him, not just because of the substitutions, but when we're in this kind of streak, they're looking for somebody to blame. Right now, it's Nocerino. If he continues to play, then it will be on Heath. But I think Heath is trying to get the best out of everybody, and that is why Nocerino continues to start. Does it be for the good of the club? Only time will tell.
Yeah, here's the thing about Antonio Nocerino is that he is a guy who has been a Serie A player, and he's been an effective one. And you bring in a guy of that talent, you can see it on the training ground, because I've been out there and I've seen what the guy can do a little bit. I mean, they don't let us watch a whole lot of training, but you know, everything's very, very closed door, hush hush. But for the few minutes they let us see, you know, he does have tons of skill. And you know, we've seen a lot of players come over from Europe and take a long time to get, you know, acclimated to the game and to the travel and to the teammates and to the new system and everything that goes along with it, the culture shock. There's a lot that is involved with it. And, you know, one thing I can tell you about his, you know, him as a person is he has a very good attitude about wanting to come in and get acclimated as quickly as possible. He's very pro-America. He's very, you know, was very intrigued to come over here, and he wants to be here. The fact that he keeps playing, well, it's easy to forget this because it seems like he's been around like for months now, and he's played 7 games. And the fact of the matter is, if you think that this player is going to help you get to the playoffs, you can't just sit him because he's not going to get any better there. You have to sort of let, you know, live with it and play through that. And at some point you do need to pull the plug on that. Maybe, you know, sit him for a game and then try it again. But, you know, I guess Heath hasn't got to that point yet. And this was going to be a difficult game to do that in without Higuita. But they can always, you know, they can always sit him and play Rivas. I mean, for me, Rivas is really the lost man this year. because he destroyed the New York Red Bulls last year. And this year, when they could have used him, they didn't put him on until very late. I thought that he could have been a difference maker, and I kind of expected him to start that game, but it wasn't meant to be. And, well, why do you play Notarino? Well, because you think he's going to be helpful. And if he's not helpful right now, you hope that he's playing his way into being helpful soon. So that's the answer to your question, Ethan. I hope that, you know, you take that with the spirit that it's intended with. You know, we see the guy play too. We see that it's not been good. And maybe he's just the bad fit for this team, or maybe he's a bad fit for the system, or maybe he's just taking a while to get acclimated like so many players do when they come from overseas. But whatever it is, I know that the guy actually does have skill, and, you know, he's a good guy. So, you know, it's sad to see how much, you know, bile and hate there is online about it. And, you know, I try to be one of those guys I try to support the team, but I also try to support the players that are wearing the purple shirt. And as long as he's here, he's gonna have my support. You know, once he goes elsewhere, you know, then he's on his own. You know,
he's not, the thing is though, based on his current performances, he's not going anywhere else. I mean, it just, let's be honest, it just took a Kugu almost 6 months to find a new club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he is, you almost want to start putting Nocerino in the Kugu barrel, and in that, you know, we at least got some slightly good performances from Kugu before he turned to, you know, not playing very well. But we've not even seen any of those bright sparks that I think people want to see as a fan. We're not getting to see the bright sparks that Heath is so obviously seeing in training. But once again, mm-hmm. training is potentially an individual. And I don't get me wrong, he has individual talent. He has to. He did play for the Italian national side at some point, but I just don't think he has the teamwork and team chemistry for this league and this team right now.
Yeah, it's not there now, but who knows whether it can get to that point or not. One of the things I've noticed about him is that he probably needs to slow down more.
Mm-hmm.
He's so, and you see this with guys that come from these elite leagues sometimes, is that he's playing a ball that his teammates for the last 10 years would have gotten to. They would have already been on the move. They would have been at that spot. These teammates are going to take a little longer to get there. Maybe they're not quite at that level. And you saw that a little bit with Kaká last year, where he's playing a ball and then he kind of yells at somebody mm-hmm. because it's like, why weren't you there? You know, and so we'll see what happens. I mean, 7 games isn't a lot to judge a player by, and it's certainly not a lot to get, you know, to get a player who hasn't played since August, you know, back to playing his best. So, you know, ultimately, Adrian Heath knows his job depends on making the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. He's not going to do something that he thinks is bad for the team or bad for winning in the long, you know, in the long term. He's a guy who still will think, you know, 2-3 years ahead at, you know, what's coming down the future. That's why, you know, you see the guys that are at OCB and that kind of stuff. But at the same time, he knows he needs to win this year. So he's not going to cut off his nose to spite his face. Mm-hmm. I think that at some point, the leash will get shorter, and maybe we'll see it this week because, you know, Heath has promised some changes this week. So we'll see what happens. Andrew, speaking of seeing what happens, what's going to happen against Montreal? What's your key matchup in that game, and what's your score prediction?
I think we kind of already covered it, but it is the defenders or the defensive midfielders against Ignacio Piatti. If we can keep him quiet, we stand a chance. But obviously, once again, I think Seren is unlikely to start, so we're back to Higuita and Carrasco. They're mm-hmm. going to have a really strong game against a person who is, as you say, probably having close to at least the beginnings of an MVP quality season. So mm-hmm. that's my key matchup. However, I am going the other side of that and saying that key matchup is not going to work out. Just because they haven't been on the same page in recent games. I'm putting Montreal down for a 3-0 win.
Whew, that's a beatdown. I agree with your key matchup. I think that Piatti against the central midfield is going to be a key. I also think that if Brekše can't play, how is Bowden going to handle Dominic Oduro? He's had trouble with him in the past. That's a lot of speed to be covered with a guy who doesn't have great pace in Bowden. that's a worry for me when we play Montreal is Luke Bowden against Dominic Oduro. So we'll see what happens. Maybe Kevin Alston will play. He certainly has the pace to play with Dominic Oduro, and you know, we haven't seen him much this year, but I thought that he acquitted himself well in that New England game in which he did play. So you know, maybe that's an option for Adrian Heath on Saturday night if Breck Shea can't go. Also, wouldn't really kill me at all if he moved Shea to left attacking mid and played Alston anyway. So he's the great thing about having versatile players is you have options. And Heath certainly has to do some tinkering with the lineup this week. So we'll see how that goes, and hopefully it will work out in our favor. That said, my scoreline prediction is going to be 2-1 to Montreal. I just think that this team has done a good job of somehow finding a way to scratch out a goal every week, and often more than that. It's been one of the higher scoring teams in the league. And, you know, Joe Bendick is going to do what he can, but I don't think you can keep Montreal off the board, you know, all night. I think it's going to kind of be one of those games where it's maybe it's 1-1 most of the game, and then they somehow get a late one off of a set piece or something because Piatti's got that kind of quality. So that's how I see it. We both probably a little bit doom and gloom, but a 6-game winless streak will do that to you.
And Montreal is currently leading the East. They have, you know, you're just rattling those people off. And even without Drogba, I think this team, you know, they have played without Drogba. They started the season without Drogba because he was struggling and he didn't want to play on turf. This is not a team that's going to be upset about him missing. They're going to come out. They're going to come down here to play. They want to show people that they're serious, just like they started last season really well. I just don't see it being a positive experience. And I agree with you that Heath is going to tinker, but what disappoints me is the fact that he's only going to tinker through necessity. He's not tinkering because he thinks this team is playing bad. He's only going to be potentially tinkering because we've got injuries or a suspension, and that's what worries me more from the coaching perspective.
Well, I can put your fear at ease then, because I know for a fact that after the game he said that wasn't good enough and changes will be made. And that's the way he put it. He wasn't putting it that, okay, we weren't good, and also we have injuries, so changes will be made. It was, that was embarrassing, that's not acceptable, and we're going to see some changes. So the fact that he put it that way, you know, not those maybe exact words, but that was the tone of his post-game, you know, talk, I guess. I mean, I guess they interviewed him somehow, maybe went up in the suite or something. But, yeah, I mean, he was not shy about saying that's the worst that they played since he's been here. So he wants to make changes, maybe send a little message to somebody that's not performing. But we don't know what that's going to be until we see them come out on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I feel like we've had those overtures before, and then still nothing's changed. I mean, I'm not trying to be all doom and gloom. I do want to end it on a good note. I hope that whatever changes he makes puts lights of fire under some people to make them proud to wear the purple jersey.
Yeah, I mean, you get that lion crest on your shirt. You should, you should be proud of that, and you should come out and give it your all. And I think we've seen a different team at home than on the road this year, and I think we're going to see a team that is not satisfied with what they've been doing. And I think they're going to play very well. I just don't think that's going to be enough, because I think Montreal is going to be one of those teams is going to probably win the East or be very close to the top of the East this year for the entire season. Mm-hmm. I think that they're playing very well as a team, and they've still not even gotten all the way healthy yet. So they got guys like Donny Toya that's out and that kind of thing. So I expect Montreal is going to be a handful, even if Orlando City does play well. But I think the guys, the Lions, will acquit themselves you know, with everything they have this week and to try to make up for last week's debacle. So that's how I see it. And we'll find out on Saturday what comes to pass, and then we'll come back and talk about it next week in a very abbreviated midweek game week. So it's going to be, next week's going to be really busy for us here at the mainland. Oh, it's going to be like that a lot because you're going to be having U.S. Open Cup coming up. We're going to have a friendly against Stoke City. We didn't even get to that, but we don't have time to get to that now. But Stoke City in July, late July, in a midweek friendly. Everybody's favorite, the midweek friendly in the middle of the season.
Yeah, during the heading out to the Olympics and everything else that's going on. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah. All right, well, that'll just about do it for the Mainland Podcast, episode 50, milestone episode. Our thanks again to Jasmine Spencer over the Orlando Pride. You know, wish them the best of luck this weekend, and I'm sure that she'll be her regular hustling self, getting all over the field and pushing the offense forward and making things happen out there. That's the great thing, is even when she's not playing well, she's making things happen. And
that's all I want to see. That's all I want to see from players who take the field.
She might be just a faster version of the female Adrian Venter, mm-hmm. really. So, and maybe we'll see Adrian on Saturday night against Montreal. Please visit our website, themainland.com, themainland, and follow us on Twitter. We're at themainland, again, M-A-N-E instead of M-A-I-N. And follow us or like us on Facebook. And please go to iTunes and rate our podcast and leave us some good feedback. We really appreciate that. So we'll come back next week. We'll talk about the Pride. We'll talk about Orlando City against Montreal. Maybe we'll even talk a little OCB if we've got time, if they do anything worth talking about. And we'll see what happens next week, and we'll be back. So for Andrew Harrison, I'm Michael Citro from the Mainland signing off, saying, go City!